Welcome, everybody. This is Mike Siggers of Simplenomics.com. Tonight, I'm privileged to have as my guest Steve Marks, author of Close Like the Pros and Replace the Worn-Out Tactics with Powerful Strategy of Interactive Selling. And when I reviewed that book on Simplenomics.com a while back, I said it was the absolute best book ever written on sales that I'd ever read, and I've read several more since then, and I'm sticking by it. It's still the best I've ever read. Steve's also the CEO of the Center for Sales Strategy. That's a consulting firm, consulting and training firm, focused on and specializing in the needs of those involved in media advertising sales. And Steve, welcome to the call, and tell us a little bit more about the Center for Sales Strategy and what the focus there is.
Well, the focus historically has been, as you said in that spectacular intro, has been on media. And by the way, you'll get no argument from me that it's the best book ever written on sales. I don't know that the whole world would agree with that, but it is surely, and most people would agree, a very different book about sales. It's not like like other books that that people have read. And one thing that folks who've read it tell me is that it's got a very loud ring of truth, like some gigantic church bells. And,
I would echo that.
It's an
eye-opener for someone that's been in sales a couple decades like me, or whether someone is starting their sales career today. This is one of the top three books they should read first. There are several. Now, we can't discount some of the old pros that that were writing these before you had your opportunity to and take away theirs. But
I've read a bunch of good sales books. It's not the only good one out there, but heavens, there's a lot of bad ones out there.
We'll have to agree on that one wholeheartedly and say yes. And as a matter of fact, I get two or three of them sent to me, whether I want them or not, from Simplenomics every week. And some of them get given away to people, and some of them get read, and some of them get put on a shelf. This one's been read three, four, five times so far and over that time frame, and it's still got some little dog-eared places where I keep a yellow note card there, and when I read an article in USA Today or someplace else that goes along with something, I stick it in that book. So I'm kind of turning it into a resource that someday I'll hand off to somebody, and their life will be made easy, all because of the work that I did with the work that you already did.
That's teamwork.
And the
you asked about the Center for Sales Strategy. We've been around now for just under 25 years. We'll have our 25th anniversary coming up in a few months. And prior to that, I'd spent my career in broadcasting and began by consulting radio stations, and that then grew into television, then into newspaper, cable, the internet, just about every imaginable advertising platform that you could imagine. And that's largely our focus. We're looking to diversify, and we do have one client who is far from that space, and that is Manheim Auto Auctions, which is the world's largest wholesale auto auction company. They'd rather that they be known as a vehicle remarketing company, because it's more than just auctions, but it's not a media company at all. It's a very fascinating business. And we help.
Are you able to take the focus that you've already had, the truths, the absolutes that you already had that you've honed and refined through years working with media? And easily work that into another market, or is it a lot more difficult?
Yeah, you know, that's a very, very interesting question. And because our approach is strategic, and because the approach is customer needs focused, for those two reasons, it's very, very broadly applicable, which is how the book is able to appeal to a very wide audience. The book is not intended for a media sales audience, although I know that some copies have gone in that direction. But you know, when your customer needs focused, then you're really addressing how it is the human beings buy, and that's really what the book is all about. And therefore, it applies to almost any kind of selling as long as your prospect is a human being. And I think that applies to most businesses in America and around the world. So there is a very, very broad application. When you get down into the grooves and you look at some of the actual expressions of those strategies, yeah, there are some differences from industry to industry, but they pale by comparison to the similarities.
That's pretty interesting. I mean, you know, I think sometimes because I sell, because of the product I sell, I wonder how successful I would be in taking that sales experience and moving it over to another industry, and wonder, you know, here's all the things that I know. Can I take those and the things that I've learned in my industry and use them in another way for somebody else, for a different product, and how quickly and easily would that happen? And I think this gave me a pretty good answer that you know, truth is truth, and it really won't matter either way.
Precisely. Yeah. What you have learned about how people buy is directly applicable. What you know about building materials, you know, some of that is going to apply and some of it won't, of course. But you could move to a lot of industries. I've gotten to know you pretty well in recent months, and you have a talent that would flow easily, especially in the marketing realm. I mean, your website is full of deep insights into marketing as well as selling, and you've got a bead on all that, and you'd be a natural there.
I appreciate it. I've enjoyed our going back and forth, whether it's been on the phone or whether it's been through email, and that's how we got to the subject of tonight's call, which is sales contests. Because you in your book you mentioned about them, in my blog posts I've written about them several times, and I think we happen to agree on this absolute and this statement that sales contests rarely work.
Bingo. Sales contests rarely ever work. The managers, of course, want to believe that all salespeople are the same and that they're all competitive, you know, and it's true that all salespeople are motivated and successful salespeople are motivated. Heavens knows not all of them. But, you want a certain go-getter kind of salesperson. I understand that. I endorse that. But people make the mistake of thinking that because they're real go-getters, and they get an early start in the morning, and they love to bring in the order, that they're somehow competitive. And that may or may not be the case. It's amazing how many really are not competitive. And if you look then at the ones who are competitive, you know, they're not necessarily competitive with others. They may be competitive with themselves. The expression of what motivates us is so different from one to the next to the next. And I know that being a great competitor and wanting to beat the other guy and to get the order just to prevent the competition from getting it is only one kind of motivation. And frankly, it's not the very best motivation to be successful in sales. The best motivation is that you want to do the right thing for your customer. Because, you know, if your whole purpose is just to snake that order from the competitor, your prospect's going to notice that sooner or later, that you seem to be obsessed with talking to the prospect about the competitor. And that's usually not a great way to get the business.
Yeah, there's you know, if all you're looking at is what your competition is trying to sell, you're missing out on about 90% of the market in some industries. And really, you know, there's a lot of things I don't look at. I don't look at where my competition is going. I try to see what they're doing, but I mainly look for those hungry, thirsty customers out there that need someone to give them what they need, help them through it, guide them through it, and form a relationship with them, and do that again and again and again.
The
rather
key word,
than worrying about cutting somebody by a nickel and keeping the competitor from getting it.
The key word in that paragraph, I think, is help. You know, the customer who wants help is the one that we ought to be serving, and we ought to find out exactly what kind of help they want, and we ought to help better than the next guy. It's really quite as simple as that. You know, this thing about competition that a lot of people don't understand Not only is it true that many salespeople are not especially motivated by pure competition, which is really what our topic here is sales contests, and that tends to pit the various the 8 salespeople in the sales force, or 58, whatever the number is, against each other. Not only are many not competitive, but even for those who are, managers sometimes often fail to understand how competitive people are wired. And yes, they love to win. So we went out and we asked managers, well, what does it mean when somebody's competitive? Oh, they love to win. Well, yes, they love to win, but there's a stronger motivation in highly competitive people, and that is that they hate to lose. This is a way stronger motivation ever than loving to win. They hate to lose. They will do anything to avoid losing. So take this to the logical conclusion. Salespeople who hate to lose will decide in any competition presented to them, is this configured in such a way that I can win? And if not, I ain't playing. I'm not even going to try to win that contest because I might lose. And, yep. We know that every sales contest is configured. It's impossible to make one that's fair for everybody. If it's based on new business, then it disadvantages the people who have a big book of business that they need to serve on a regular basis, and they have less time for new business. If it's based on total billing, it disadvantages the younger or the newer people on the sales staff who haven't built up such a clientele already. It doesn't matter how you design it. If it's a special product, this month, we got a spiff on product A or product B, well, it disadvantages the people whose client list contains people largely who wouldn't be a good candidate for product A or for product B. So there's always conditions in the contest that make it more attractive or less attractive. And the highly competitive people, the very first thing they do is they look at the rules and they find all the ways they could lose. And it only takes one way for them to lose. They say, I'm not doing that. So it the sales contests don't only cut out the people who are not very competitive. They manage to cut out a huge percentage of the people who are competitive.
I thought I was the only person that looked at those things and dissected them immediately, looking for all the ways that I didn't have a chance. But I think that I'm like the guy that lands on the moon. I'm not alone here.
Yeah. Mike, you're normal.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if my wife's going to agree to that one if she sees this in text or listen to the audio, but we'll try to slip it past her. But more importantly, and I wish we could rewind and go back to there, but when we transcribe the text or when I listen to this audio again, I'm going to find something there, and I'm going to try to remember, because you just said something a second ago, and I think it might have been the only time I've ever heard it, and if it's the first time I've ever heard it, we definitely need to go back and get it and find it. But you mentioned about the competition between salespeople in an organization competing against each other. Shouldn't they be on the same team and not fighting against each other?
Well, sales contests, by the conventional definition of sales contests, are that at the end of the contest period, we are going to name the winners, and we're going to give them the prizes that they won. And in that respect, they're competing against each other. I think the question of teamwork and working together is a very interesting one, and that one probably varies by industry. There are industries where it's probably very common for salespeople to help each other out all the time, and it's in their interest to do that. The industries that I work with and my company works with actually have a lot of competition already built in, and that's because the inventory is limited. If you think about the commercial time that's available per hour or per week, say on a TV station or radio station, a lot of our clients are in those two sectors, there's only so much, and the salesperson who sells it first has an advantage over the one who comes later and has slim pickings, or maybe it's completely sold out by the time he can get an order. So there's a certain natural competition between them, and they're not motivated to work with each other.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are really not up to speed on that, and they don't know that that time is actually regulated, and, you know, government regulated, federal regulated, whatever. But, you know, whether it's 8 minutes per half hour or 20 minutes per hour type of thing, it's actually regulated. So when you say there's only so much time, there's only so much time, and once those 8 minutes or 20 minutes are sold, you know, there's not anything else there. And we tend to think that, you know, I just sold 10,000 widgets, I can sell another 1,000. In that industry, those guys,
that's right,
they can't sell another 1,000.
That's,
you know,
right. Actually, in recent years, it's more regulated by market forces than it is by the government. But it's equally true. You know, you can't run 30 minutes of advertising in every hour. Nobody's going to put up with that. So, yeah, it's pretty tightly limited.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, really don't have any idea that that's probably, you know, where guys are not going to help themselves. Whereas in my industry, you know, there's, you know, whether it's a house or a commercial building, and we're talking about a whole state or two states, or like us, whether you're in four or six states, there's a lot of building going on. And, you know, I had a salesman call me this afternoon, and he said, hey, I'm happen to be such and such, and here's this going on, this is your territory, what do you want me to do? And I said, I want you to take care of that. I've got enough to do. It's all yours, you know. And in that industry and the other industry we just spoke about, that probably wouldn't happen.
That's right. It's unusual when it happens.
Yeah, but the thought that people in the same company are fighting against, are competing against one another, that just seems wrong. I mean, that would seem like the first thing that would tell you that sales contests are probably not the absolute best way, and not the best idea. And I think when I look at our points we're going to go over, we're going to get to that in a minute. But what the first one we wanted to talk about there was, and we've talked about it, is some of the reasons they don't work is they don't motivate those people who have no natural motivation.
That's right. That's right. Not everybody is highly motivated. And somebody once told me, and I actually went looking for this before our program began tonight, and I couldn't find it easily, but I know I've heard people say that if you look at the Latin root for motivation, that it has entirely to do with what is within us, that there is no such thing as motivating somebody else. Each person is or is not motivated, and if they are motivated, well, everybody's motivated to do something, even if it's to sit on your butt and do nothing. That's a kind of motivation. But everybody is motivated in their own way and for different reasons, and the notion that we can motivate somebody else is crazy. Managers demotivate all the time. You can sap somebody's motivation. You can drain it. You can counter it. You can ruin it. But you can't do a lot to enhance it. What you can do is to understand every individual and tap into their motivation. If you know which, sometimes we explain to managers, if you know which buttons are connected and which buttons aren't connected in that person, you can press the buttons that are connected instead of the ones that aren't connected. And people have so many different reasons to perform. The very best managers, their people perform for the manager. They would never want to let the manager down. It's a powerful mentoring relationship, and they need no more reason than, hey, I work for Mike Siggers, and he's the greatest manager in the world, and if he needs me to do this, I'm going to do whatever it takes to break through that goal. That's all I need to know. That's one kind of motivation. Some do it for their customers. It doesn't matter what the sales manager says.
Yeah.
You know, the sales manager is irrelevant in their life. Some do it for their mom. You know, people are you know, people win the a trophy in sports or something, and you interview them, and the first thing they want to do is say, hi, Mom.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mom.
I
mean, moms have a powerful influence on us decades after they're gone. You know, some people do it, you know, because they're saving up for their dream boat, right? Or a dream car or house or whatever it might be. I mean, everybody is different, and the manager who understands the individual, what they really ought to do is, if the person is motivated by some sort of an incentive program, just customize it for that person. Forget the one-size-fits-all contest. Here are the rules. All 20 of you, these are the rules. Good luck. May the best man or woman win. Well, no. You know, each individual, and you decide for each individual, what's the best way that I can get the best performance out of Sally, you know? Forgetting Jane, you know, Jane's all different. I'll get to her tomorrow. I'm focused on Sally today. What do I know about Sally that will help me to motivate her to press the right buttons to get her to perform?
Can you do you have any contacts in the nutraceuticals realm? Because if you could get a pill made that we could give that to sales managers, I believe you would revolutionize the sales industry easily. Because theoretically, basically, what I heard you say was each one of us starts with, and let's give it a quantifier, 100% of our own personal motivation. And there's really not going to be a lot added to it. There's just going to be some taken away from it. And the best thing that a sales manager can do is take away as little as possible.
Yeah. Precisely.
That's kind of... it's revolutionary to me, and I like it, and I believe it, and I have believed it for a long time. I've just never had anybody else put it in words, and I kind of thought I was off on another, you know, realm someplace, and I just really, you know, was way off base. But
there you go,
really
being
good.
Normal again.
Yeah, I try not to do that every day, and I stay away from sales managers as much as I can because they do tend to bother me, and when I start thinking about some of the silly things that they say, it takes me away from my mission that day, which is to find those 8, 10, 12, 15, 20, however how many people it is that I'm going to find and get them what they need and come home and put my feet up and say, man, that was good. You know, I hope that happens again tomorrow. But when you have to listen to somebody and every hour or every 10 minutes or after every call or whatever it is, you think back and you hear them saying whatever it was they said that really is bothering you or sticking with you or something, that's you know, I believe that's kind of a I believe it's validation for what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Maybe we need to delve into that further and someday and do something about that. But another thing we thought about when we thought about sales contests was that they largely ignored by those who are not competitive because there are people motivated more strongly by factors other than competition.
Yeah.
And they a lot of times they're just basically ignored by the highly competitive people because the rules are not configured for them to win, and the highly competitive people will not play if they can't see a way to win. So,
right. Right. Remember, they hate to lose. It's all about hating to lose.
Yeah, and I hate to lose more than I like to win because I've won so much. It doesn't really, I mean, I love it and I do it, but, you know, I'm used to it. It's those times when I lose that just really stick with me, and that, you know, I agree. I hate to lose something that I really, really wanted. But when I win something that I really, really wanted, even though it's good, the amount that it's good is nowhere near the amount that the bad one is when I lose. So I think,
right.
You know, whether that's just for me or everybody else, I think you're absolutely
right. Yeah, well,
right.
You know, the successful people have some ego, and they have a pretty good opinion of themselves, and it's nice to get confirmation of it. And when we win, we get confirmation of it. But, you know, because we're good, we get confirmation frequently.
Yeah.
The problem with losing is that it attacks our self-image. You know, it's just a much more powerful emotion.
Yeah, I agree. It's a lot more powerful than the win is, and whether that came after two decades or whether that was like that from day one, I really can't tell you that I remember because it was too long ago for me to remember. But I know for today, it's absolutely true. So if we think about those 4 points that I just mentioned, those 4 points will take away almost every salesperson that could be put in the contest in a given company.
Precisely.
And that's just going to leave, you know, one or two, and man, do you think the sales contest was designed so that they'll win, or, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, as soon as when there's only one left, then you can kind of tailor the contest for him. And then as soon as you go and tailor the contest for one and it works, then you start thinking, what if I did that for each and every one?
Yeah, so what I hear you say is, if you were going to do it that way so only one or two people could win, why don't you just, you know, individualize the process and give each of those people, you know, a goal or individualized management or
right.
personal one-on-one coaching or whatever they need, and won't that alleviate some of the taking away of motivation of the other people?
Precisely. It'll work way better than a sales contest.
A sense of what would we call it? You know, when, you know, two salespeople. I mean, we have salespeople in my we don't have salespeople in my company that I don't like because we've never fought against each other.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do sales contests, so you know, there's none of them that I have a dislike for. There's none of them that have ever beaten me out on something, so I don't have that sense. So it's easy for me when a guy calls to give him some help or let him take over on a sale or something like that, because I don't have any, you know, I don't have any ill feelings towards him. And if I don't have any ill feelings towards him and he doesn't have any towards me, it makes it easier for us to work together. In essence, it makes our company stronger.
That's right.
So
and when the manager is individualizing to each person rather than handing a contest out to everybody, each salesperson knows it, and they know the individual attention they've gotten from the manager, and it enhances the relationship with the manager. Whereas a contest is a way of saying, hey, I think all you bozos are about the same, so everybody gets the same rules, and it really undermines the individual relationship that the manager ought to be having with every person.
Yeah. I mean, it drives me crazy to hear people say, or have them contact me through Simplenomics and say, and they ask and they say, you know, we do this for all of our salespeople and they all get this. And when I delve into it, I find that here's one salesperson that sells $2 million a year, and there's a next level of salesman, they might sell $1 million, and then there's 100 of them that sell $200,000. And the first thing I ask them is, do you compensate them all exactly the same? And they said, well, of course, that's the way you do it. And I said, no, that's not the way you do it. That guy that's selling $2 million a year is doing 10 times what those other people are doing. Why would you pay him 5% of gross margin and the same other people 5% of gross margin if he's, well, you can't do that to him. I said, why?
You know how I heard this?
More.
You know how I heard this explained many years ago? It's the difference between chess and checkers, that lousy managers are treating their people like checkers. Checkers on the board all move the same way, right?
Yeah.
You know, so red man or black man, they move the same way along the board, but chessmen all move differently, and they all have their own conditions of employment in this case. And so many managers think that the only way to be fair is to treat everybody the same. So there's this other great quote, if I can remember this correctly. The most unequal thing in the world is to treat unequals equally. Isn't that cool? It's been attributed to a lot of different people, and I don't remember all their names. So in other words, nobody really knows who said it first. The most unequal thing in the world is to treat unequals equally.
Wow, that's powerful. But it's really not all that powerful unless somebody takes it and actually uses it. And I can tell you this unequivocally. Every person who's been a sales manager or something above that or just below that has contacted me and talked about sales contests, and I try to tell them, why would you do that? You know, try to talk them out of it and try to teach them that and talk to them about not – one person has ever taken kindly to my suggestion that what you and I just talked about was right, and that the way they do it is wrong, and that the way they compensate their people is not in their best interest, because that guy knows he's selling 10 times as much as the other gentleman, but he's getting the same amount of compensation, you know, percentage-wise. And I guarantee you, because of that, he's sitting at night on Monster.com or CareerBuilder looking for somebody that will compensate him differently. Whereas if you individualized it and made him feel special and said, hey, you're selling 10 times what they're selling. I can't pay you 10 times what I pay them percentage-wise, but I want you to have more because you deserve it. Now, how many times would you have to tell him that phrase, because you deserve it, every year to keep him going at that same rate? Once or twice?
That's right.
Maybe. And he would be like clockwork, bringing in those profits, bringing in those sales to the company. Yet every time, whether it's monthly or quarterly, whenever your sales come out and he looks over and sees that this other person got paid just like he did, same percentage-wise, his motivation quotient goes down a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And whether it takes 2 years or 20 years, he'll eventually go someplace else.
Yep. He will deduce that the boss doesn't much care, and in many cases, he'll believe, and rightly so, the boss doesn't even know what I do every day.
Yeah, boy, how many times have I heard that one? Of course, it came out of my mouth most of the time, but it's exactly true. And you know, it was with previous employers. If that's any indication to people, it wasn't with the current one. It was with the previous people that I was with.
Righto.
Well. Steve, I appreciate you being on the call with me and sharing it, because we brought up some good stuff and you have really hit the nail on the head. And after I have this transcribed and bring it out, I think I'm going to have to email you and call you again, because I found two or three other subjects that we really need to delve a little bit deeper into, since we were trying to stay within the realm of sales contests this time. But I think we're going to have a couple other topics that we're going to have to delve a little deeper into.
Well, I look forward to that. It's always fun talking to you, Mike.
Well, for everybody that's listening, or everybody that gets a transcript of this, I want to tell you again, you don't have to go to Simplenomics and look at the review. You can see reviews anywhere, but you need to go, whether it's Amazon or your local bookseller, and you need to get a copy of Close Like the Pros from my friend Steve Marks. And if there's anything that you think they can do for you, you can go over to the Center for Sales Strategy and contact those guys there. And get some absolute good help, because you cannot listen to what Steve just shared with us tonight and not think that those guys are going to give you some good advice.
One more website that listeners could visit is the official website for our book, Close Like the Pros, and that is interactiveselling.com. Or, if it's easier to remember, closelikethepros.com will get you there also.
And interactive selling is not only a great domain name, it's actually what the book is about, is interactive selling. And it's a phenomenal, revolutionary, I wouldn't want to call it a set of tactics. It's basically a way of looking at each individual sale. And it's phenomenal. I'm looking forward to talking more about that. Steve, again, I appreciate your time. Looking forward to the next one.
Mike, I enjoyed it.
Have a good evening, sir.
You too. Bye-bye.